Welcome to the Victory Lane podcast.
Joining me today is undoubtedly one of the most distinguished guests we've ever had on this show, Lynn St. James, along with a panel featuring Dan Davis, the publisher of Victory Lane magazine, Alex Rourke, the president of ESCDA, Jim Donato, the co-race chair for the Elkhart Lake Vintage Festival, and Stacy Donato, head registrar for VSCDA. Let's begin with you, Alex.
Thank you all for doing this. I want to thank Victory Lane for their continuous support of vintage racing and VSCDA and for this event. And Lynn, when they became aware of what we were doing, the enthusiasm from Dan and from Kellick was just extraordinary. So they've been on board from the start, even though we hadn't had a formal call yet. From the VSCDA side, you'll see Stacy Donato in here. Stacy's office manager, but she's also really going to be the most busy person at the event because she's also the chief registrar. And with the number 300 to 400 cars at Road America that are inevitable, there's nobody busier. And nobody's stronger than Stacy to cope with it all while staying diplomatic. Also, this is Jim Donato, whom you've met on the phone and been talking to a lot. Jim is vice president of VSCDA, and as I would call him, really lead co-chair of the event. And you can see him, of course, leading a race in the car over his left ear. And certainly, you know Dan for forever. And Kellick is the person who keeps all the wheels turning, keeps all this going. And he has been, could not have been kinder to us. And I'm Alex Rourke, and I'm president of VSCDA. I can't even claim to be properly co-chairing the event with Jim because he's doing so much. Nobody could even claim vaguely close to doing half of it, but no one person can do all of it. So I'll pitch in where I can with it. And thank you so much for being here with us. We greatly appreciate having you. When I sent the note over there, just wanted to make it clear we've got some different topics we'd like to touch on, but this really is your story and what you would like to present to us and have make sure that we get out to the podcast and get out to the both people who will be coming to the race, be racing, and also to a more general populace, because you do have a whole bunch of messages you're trying to get across. So that's really the thing. With that, I really would like to maybe take this to really ask you if you would start telling us a little bit about how did you become involved with racing and how did this extraordinary career get started?
Sure. Thank you for having me. And you know, racing has been a part of my life, I guess as a teenager, but only drag racing and only muscle cars. And, you know, back in the 60s, that was what kids were doing, you know, and so that was how it started. Or that's when the seed was planted, I think. Very first time I was in any kind of a race, I was in a drag race in my friend's GTO, and I just will never forget being on the line and, you know, getting it up to they told me get up to 3,000 RPM, you know, and then you dump the clutch and you go. And it was just the moment, you know, that I was like a thrill. But I actually won with that car and came home with a trophy, and my mother was not happy. So that kind of brought that to a halt. And, you know, I did everything as a young female in the 60s, getting out of high school, getting a job, doing everything that society expected to do, and got married and, you know, just trying to figure it all out though, you know? And so the gentleman that I married shortly then said, well, he's relocating to Florida. I grew up in Ohio. And then we went to the 24 hours at Daytona and the 12 hours at Sebring. And now I see road racing for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, besides the fact that these cars run all night, you know, and all of that. But, you know, I saw the superstars like, you know, Mario Andretti and Pedro Rodriguez and Mark Donohue and, you know, but at the same time in the back of the grid, I saw Corvettes and Camaros and Porsches. And when I said real people drove race cars, they weren't all superhumans, you know? So, you know, try to make a long story short, we found out that the Sports Car Club of America actually was an organization. And of course this is before Google and, you know, the internet that we kept trying to find it in the yellow pages and couldn't. I mean, I just remember that was really frustrating. But we found out there was a track in Palm Beach that SCCA ran and what the Sports Car Club was all about. So we went and became members. Then I found out that you had to go to driver school to get a competition license. And so actually my husband went first, but he saw that I was having almost more fun than he was. I mean, he got his license and decided to buy a Corvette and turn it into a race car. The car broke down it's a used deal, you know, on a Sunday where you go look at the classifieds, and then the car broke down on the test drive. And I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. He said, no, this is perfect, because I can buy this car for practically nothing and turn it into a race car. And, but then I said, well, what about me? And he said, there was a new class started in 1974 called Showroom Stock by SCCA. And so he went out and bought a Ford Pinto and put a roll bar in it and a 5-point seatbelt and a 5-pound fire extinguisher, which was required for all race cars, and not just Pintos, if you remember the story of the Pinto. And I went to driver's school and got my competition license and started racing the Pinto as my street car during the week. And then on weekends, we raced it. And I raced it, and he raced the Corvette. And then in Florida, there was a lot of racing, so that was kind of cool. And but in my very first race after driver's school, the second driver's school where they put an X on your car, and you know, now you're in a race, not just driver's school, I lost control of the car when the overall leader came to pass me, and I ended up in this body of water that I, if you know Palm Beach International Raceway, which is now closed, but there's a lot of water down there, and I thought it was just a pond, and it turned out to be a bit of a lake, and the car totally submerged. And so my very first race was not great. I was embarrassed. I remember at the end of the day, the entertainment on Saturday night was to go down and watch the divers pull the car out. And by then I turned, you know, I put shorts and t-shirt on and was drinking a beer like everybody else. And I remember standing on this little mound watching the, you know, the divers pull the car out. The guy next to me said, so who was driving that car? I said, I don't know. Like, I wasn't going to own up to that. So we had to flat tow the car home and dry it out and drive it back and forth to work. And I had, so my, you know, I had a real comeuppance about maybe this isn't as fun and exciting and easy as I thought maybe it would be. And so, and my husband at the time, who was just a great guy, I mean, he said, you know, you got to decide how bad do you really want to do this? And so I buckled down and raced that Pinto, won the Florida Regional Championship in it, and then moved on from there. So that's how it started. And in reality, I feel like I kind of was reborn, you know, as one of those people that we all, when we're young, we're trying to figure out, you know, what's life all about, you know? And even though I was a hard worker and I was busy and, you know, and all that, I just, something was left unfulfilled, and racing filled that. And it's been a part of my life ever since, and it will be till the end. Sorry, it's a long story, but that's how it all started.
It's a great story. And you don't know how many people on this call have been in the drink one place or another. That's wonderful. One thing I was curious about with, if you just wanted to highlight some of the things that you think have been for you the most meaningful from the racing career, and if there are any stories related to Road America.
Well, it was a big story to Road America. I mean, I can tell two particularly. One was when I started racing in the IMSA had a series called the Kelly American Challenge, and it was, I think, one of the most important things that could have happened for women in racing. I didn't know that at the time, but I was competing in Bill Scott Racing. Bill Scott, and out of Summit Point, was campaigning my car, and they decided to try to make me, I wanted to be a really good race car driver. I didn't want to just be a racer. And so they said, well, you know, you should run a Formula Ford. And so, and we should go to the June Sprints. So I went to the June Sprints at a Formula Ford with Bill Scott Racing. I think I qualified, I don't know, maybe 40th or 30th out of, you know, I mean, there were like cars everywhere. And, you know, that track was just immense. And so that was my first time. I did finish the race, but all those young lions out there that thought they were going to become Formula One drivers, you know, it was like, oh my God. So that was my first exposure actually to Road America. But the one that is the most significant was in 85, when I was, my very first pro win in IMSA, in professional racing, was at Road America in the Camel GT series in GTO division with Johnny Jones as a co-driver in the Mustang. And so Road America will always hold a very, very sweet spot in my heart because I had my first pro win there.
That's great. Anybody have other questions? And there's gotta be something you're wondering about.
Well, I would follow up that question with something like, did you later race at Road America? And for all of the race enthusiasts, what was the most daunting corner at Road America?
There's a lot of them there. I raced not a whole bunch, because I mean, at IMSA is when I did most of it, and also in Trans Am and SCCA and Trans Am, so it was all in the 80s. There's really a lot of them there, because I think probably, is it turn six where you come up the hill and there's that left-hander? Mm-hmm. To me, it's blind, and you know, it's if you get that wrong, it messes up really the whole series after that. And so it's almost like two tracks. I mean, and that's, of course, the turn before that, which I guess that is five, that hard left-hander, and then where, you know, you kind of break the car, you can break the track into, you know, two separations there, because you could go straight there and come back around. It is almost like two different racetracks, you know? And so I think it's turn six at the top of the hill. I think for me, that was the hardest, because you just don't know what's going to happen, what's on the other side of it, you know, either. And if you're focusing only on your line and your, and then bingo, you know, you come up on traffic or an issue, you've really got, you just got to pray that you make the right, you know, move. So to me, that was probably the hardest. I don't like slow corners. That's not really slow, but in comparison to a lot of the fast corners. And I hate corners that, like at Sebring, where you almost feel like you're pulling into your driveway or something, where you have to go from a very high speed to slow. You know, those are the challenged corners that I just don't do well with. But high speed corners I love, which thank God when I got to Indy, there are four of those there that just suited my driving style beautifully.
Well, you must love the kink.
I do. No, I do. That's why it's funny. The kink is usually what people, but it's thread the needle and it's sweet. So,
and you can see what's coming up there too.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty much. I have the Lola that I completed rookie orientation with at Indy. It's a 91 Lola. And I could actually find the picture, but it's hanging on my wall in the living room now. It has a Road America story, because at the kink, in a vintage race, somebody else was racing it. I guess either the front wing came off or there was some problem. But anyway, it had a horrific crash. And I think Jeremy Dale was driving it. And they had to use the jaws of life to get him out. So I ended up getting the tub in pieces and had it restored. And it's now hanging on my wall, as I said, because it's my first love. It's my first IndyCar that I completed rookie orientation with. So it has a Road America story, but not with me in it.
Kelly, I know you were really looking forward to meeting Lynn. You've got to have some questions there too.
The next one on your agenda rolls right out from her answer there, which is, what is it like to qualify as a rookie? I imagine that must be a very high pressure experience. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the pressure is like getting there, you know, just getting there. I mean, it was a 4-year process from the time I first drove an IndyCar for Dick Simon, who then said to me, we can do this. He didn't say you can do this. He said, we can do this. And that's when I'm like, oh my God, I have a team owner who really thinks I can do this. And so that was in 1988. And then I got to Indy in 1992 after 150 companies telling me no, the 151st. J.C. Penney said yes. So that to me, the pressure was getting there. And then when I got there, Dick did everything. I mean, I was so blessed to have a team owner who was a former driver and a good teacher and somebody who believes in his drivers. Not every team owner really supports their drivers. They kind of, sometimes they're really more about the crew, and the drivers are kind of like a plug-in, you know, if it works fine, if it doesn't, out, next one in. Dick's a very loyal and dedicated to, if he believes in his driver, man, he really gets the team to support the driver too. It's a culture. I mean, being on a race team is a culture as much as anything else. And so that took a lot of the pressure off, you know. Plus Dick is a great teacher, and as a former driver, he could just tell me what I needed to know when I needed to know it, instead of trying to cram the whole thing, you know, like do it and then go do it. It was like a process. And it was during the time when we had the whole month of May. So leading up to that, I mean, every day was like Christmas. And I would go to the track every day, whether we were going to go out that day or not. I couldn't believe it. I was like, when's our session? You know, I'm so used to having a schedule of when your practice session is, when you qualify. Track opens at 11, track closes at 6. So it's up to us to decide when we're going out, you know, and you can't just run all the time, which is what I'd love to do. But so by the time we got to qualify, I was so ready and so right. And I just remember as I pulled out onto the track, because in qualifying, there's this whole ritual, you know, you're in line and then you come, now you're next in line and the chief steward is there. And it's a ritual. I mean, and the chief steward says the same thing every time you go out, and, you know, tells you what you got to do. You're going to go out onto the racetrack, you're gonna, you know, first lap around, you know, will be your first warm up, and you're, you know, then you'll get the next warm up and then the green. And, you know, they go through the whole thing every time, like, I got it. But anyway, the very first time. And I remember as I pulled out onto the track, I was like, this is my racetrack, because it's the first time you're on the track by yourself. You know, all the other times you're out there with other cars and you're processing, you're learning and you're processing so much information and all. I mean, I was just like, this is my racetrack. And that level of confidence, I guess, and appreciation and, it was fabulous. I mean, it was just freaking fabulous. And even though that wasn't my qualifying, we kept it, but it was my first attempt. We kept it. At that time, you only got 3. And then it held me at, I don't know, 20 something position. But then a lot of cars hadn't qualified yet, because this was also when there were like 60 cars, you know, attempting for the 33 spots. And I remember Dick saying, he said, you did good. That car's never gone any faster. It was at a 219 and with, you know, dot something, something, something. But he said, I'm worried that it's going to stick. It's going to hold. And so I had to wait the whole week and then go out to qualify again next weekend to get back. I didn't get bumped, but, you know, to kind of protect my position. And so that's when the pressure really, you know, when you now are under the pressure and under the gun of there's other, I don't know. It was just different. But that first time I was just like, this is my racetrack and I'm just soaking this all in. It's just my baby, you know. It was just wonderful.
Given how it's now part of, I'll call it, racing history, and you're taking an extraordinarily important step for women racing, did the significance of it hit you at that time?
No, I mean, one there was a moment. I remember I was in pit lane. I didn't even have a suit on. We weren't going out, and there was some downtime, and I was on pit lane, and one of the officials, we were just standing there, you know, chatting away. And the stands are pretty much empty, you know, because it's during the week. And I just remember him saying to me, he looked out in the stands, and this is like an old crusty official. And he looked out in the stands and he went, you know, when a woman wins Indy, this place is gonna go crazy. And I remember then responding to him saying, and I wanna be that woman. But as I thought about that, I thought about it afterward. I thought, he didn't say if, he said when. Words are powerful. It's like Dick saying to me, he didn't say you could do this. He said, we can do this. This guy said, when a woman wins Indy. So I realized that there was a shift happening, you know, compared to when Janet was there in the 70s. And so that, I remember that, but you know, a lot of other stuff happened. But what happened is after Indy in 92, I got so much fan mail. I've never gotten fan mail like that. I mean, and it was a lot of people asking for advice, not just asking for an autograph, you know? And so I started to realize that this is making a big difference to other people, you know, that, and that's when, and by the 90s, I had worked for almost a decade with the Women's Sports Foundation, which was founded by Billie Jean King. And I got to meet Billie Jean, who was one of my heroes. And if you've ever been in the presence of Billie Jean for more than 30 seconds, you are gonna definitely be impacted that you have to change the world. I mean, it's like, it's your responsibility. And so I would get this opportunity often to be in the presence of Billy and other female athletes from other sports. And all of this combined with this fan mail and with, I realized I got, this is something different now. This is no longer just about me getting to race. This is about how my racing and doing what I'm doing represents something to other people. And so it's a responsibility, but it's also, it just changed me, you know? And that's when I started my own foundation and I started my driver development program, which I did for 20 years. You know, people like Sarah Fisher, Danica Patrick, and Melanie Droxel, and Erin Crocker, a lot of, you know, gals came through it. Over 230 young females from 33 states and 7 countries. We only did it once a year. I really am proud of that, but I just felt that was my way of trying to lift, you know, the opportunities for others. And then in the mid 2000s, you know, people started doing things differently. I had a hands-on event. People started learning more online, you know, and virtually and all that, even in the 2000s, of the mid 2000s. And so I stopped that program. But then this last year, you know, social injustices that are happening around the country and around the world have really become an elevated issue much more than it ever has, I think, in society before, even though I remember the 70s well, and I remember, you know, we've had uprisings before because of injustices, but it took on a whole new life, I think, these last couple of years. And so it felt like it was really sticking. I mean, that this was like a commitment now rather than a policy that somebody's just going to check the box. So I got to meet Beth Beretta, who actually put together her own race team and ran Indy last year with Simona DiSilvestro. And we started talking, and long story short, we ended up assembling about 40 other women in motorsports and men, because I believe this is not about women. It's about men and women doing something and for women, celebrating and elevating. And we created now Women in Motorsports North America. I also represent North America on the FIA Women in Motorsports Commission, which has helped me understand how you can really make this a much bigger deal than just, it's not just about drivers, which is of course where my passion is, but it's about women in all areas and all disciplines. Because I mean, I'm sorry, you just introduced me to Stacy. The registrar is probably the most important. They're the face of whatever organization you show up at a racetrack. That's the first person you're going to see. And 99% of the time, that is a woman. And it's not that there's just certain categories of what women can be successful at, but it's how the sport is going to grow, and it's how the sport is going to better represent society, which will make more people want to be a part of it, you know? And so if you can't see it, you can't be it. And if, you know, so the whole thing is just, to me, it's so much common sense. But it's just not always been a priority. And so it is a priority now. And now we have a collective group, a community of men and women who are really going to commit to advancing, doing mentorship, you know, doing action items to benefit the women that are already in the sport, as well as then bringing new women into it. And so I'm pretty excited. I'm re-energized. So it's an important initiative and it's an important program. We've got a website, which hopefully people will go to, which is womeninmotorsports.com. And we are a portal. All what we want to do is be this portal of information, so that if you're already in the sport and you're kind of stuck or you don't understand something, you can go there. And there's just a wealth of information. And we've got so many experts that have contributed to this website. And then at the same time, if you're, you know, if you're thinking, hey, I wonder what am I going to do next in my life? You know, and I went to some race and I thought it was pretty cool. You know, then you could find out how to do that, you know, where to go first or how to be involved. So it's meant to be a real portal of information. I mean, I just read an article that, I can't remember the writer's name now, he's from Road America, he's from your area. And he did this on these two Amish guys that are now into motorsports. They're now racing or working on NASCAR teams. So you don't always have to come from a family or from, you know, so much of it is how the sport has functioned for so long, is that you tend to inherit almost the passion because of family members. Well, if that's what we're going to rely on, the sport's never going to grow. And so, you know, I think it that was a great story to kind of, Dave Coleman, I think this is his name, the guy that's the writer from up there. He's a great guy. He's interviewed me and I've read his stuff. But I just think, you know, we need to reach out. We need to lift and celebrate and then engage new people. I have a theory. Women need to be invited. Men just show up. I mean, seriously, if you get a bunch of gals together and they say, oh, are we going to go over to that party? Well, no, we weren't invited. A bunch of guys get together. Hey, you know, Joe's having a party. Oh, yeah, let's go. I mean, they don't say, oh, well, we weren't invited, you know. And so it's kind of just a little instinctive thing. So we've just got to, we don't have to do women only, but we have to. And that's why I love when Jim Donato called me and told me what he was thinking or what he wasn't thinking, that they have actually decided to celebrate women at the VSCDA event at Road America in September. I'm like, are you sure? You know, and so, yeah, he goes, yeah. And I'm like, this is great because we're not separating women. We're not making it a women's only thing. But what we're doing is inviting women and celebrating the women that are there by bringing in Cindy Lux, bringing in Victoria Thomas, and bringing in my buddy Pam Shatral. You know, it's like, this is like, hey, we're just going to hang out and have a good time and with you guys. And so it's going to be great. I commend the organization for doing this. And I hope everybody appreciates it and enjoys it and nobody gets their nose out of joint.
You know, at some point after you manage to get in through SCCA or rent a car or Skip Barber or however you get in at the bottom level, and you have a little racing under your belt, you decide that's your passion, then getting into the pro ranks and advancing into the pro ranks, it becomes a sponsorship game. And I think, you know, how is the organization doing? Or maybe tell us some of your tales on how you made it. Because if you're not sponsored at the top level, you're not going to play.
Very true. As far as first of all, we just launched Women in Motorsports North America in April. So we're still, you know, growing and figuring it out. But you're right, Dan. I mean, it's always about funding, quite frankly, whether you're a race team or a racetrack. I mean, you know, to put on events, it takes funding. For me, some very unique things were in my life. One was that I was a business person before I was a racer. My husband and I built a business. It was, you know, in consumer electronics, and then we started an auto parts business. So I'd go to the CES show every year. So I understood business. And when I raced on my own money for 7 years, you know, just whatever discretionary dollars we could pull together. Yeah, you're right. When it got to re-racing in IMSA at the pro level, takes a little more money. So I chased sponsors and, you know, didn't do very well in the beginning, but I created a company called Creative Images. I would send out proposals and talk about Lindsay James. And then I realized I can't sign this letter, Lindsay James. I mean, it's like I'm talking about myself. So I would make up people's names, making my company look bigger. And then knowing that whoever was calling me, if they asked for that name, I knew which company that was that I pitched. So you have to be creative. You have to understand that it's a business. And it's also, it's not about you. It's about them. I mean, I used to get Advertising Age, Automotive News, you know, learn as much about the industry that you're going into or that you're going after that you can and understand that it's about them. What can you do for them? Not what we all know what they can do for you, give you money so you can go racing. And I think not many racers understand that. So I think I had this business head. And when I pitched Ford Motor Company, which was my first major sponsor, being my first real sponsor, you know, I researched them through Automotive News. I found out that they were trying to make, you know, a difference for women in their industry, not just to sell cars, but for women in non-traditional areas. I saw that article in Car and Driver magazine. It took me 3 years, but I got them. And I had them for 14 years on 1-year contract. So then I had to renegotiate my contract every year. And I didn't have an agent, didn't have a manager. I figured this out on my own. So you've either got to have a good business head and learn, or you better have somebody, you know. And I tell a lot of young drivers or young people, not just drivers, you need to build a community, your own board of directors. You need to have attorneys and accountants and, you know, marketing people. If you're not a marketing person, have have a buddy or person, get to be a, have a friend, you know, build a community of your experts around you that you trust and that have the, your best interest. And that's how you, you know, there's a lot of minefields out there. There's a lot of, it's a tough business. It's a tough sport and a tough business.
Well, you did it.
And very well, yes.
And you set an example from doing it, proving that it could be done. That's extraordinary. Yeah, one of the things I think is so great with the organization that you founded is most people don't believe they can do something unless they see somebody that they can identify with having achieved it before. And that can be very easily brought down, you know, issues of gender, issues of race, et cetera. And if you'll forgive just a side note on this, I've been involved with a thing in Chicago that gets inner city kids, high school inner city kids, jobs with the major securities and law firms in the city.
Oh, wow.
And they're often the first in their family to make it through high school or go to college. But when we have a graduation ceremony and bring back alums from the program, you know, like 5-10 years out, and not everybody ends up going to Harvard and, you know, and being a master of the universe, but a lot of them really do succeed. You can see at the graduation ceremony that these kids who are, let's say, 17 are so focused on somebody that looks like them and it came from a similar neighborhood or something of that nature. It makes a total, it's a whole lot different. Again, when you can see somebody that looks like you that's pulled it off. And that's what you're really trying to get there. And I think also the idea that it's not just to be the race driver, it's the whole motorsports industry, you know, all the openings that could come up in there, which is really just, it betters it for everybody. But if you're just related on, did it happen in your own family before? You're right, the industry doesn't grow and the world doesn't get any better from it.
No, it doesn't get bigger, it doesn't get better. But right, if you can see it, you can be it. And that's where, if you look at our website, the community, we have like 10 categories, you know, we have officials, we have engineers, we have marketing. I mean, and all of these are careers that are successful people, you know, in these careers. So that's part of our story. You got it. And I mean, you do see it in other disciplines, talking about it in other industries and, you know, but not so much in motorsports because I don't know why, but it's time we learn from best practices from other things and utilize it ourselves.
Well, you have a big event coming up. It's a kind of a mixer and introducing people and with your organization.
Thank you, darling. We do have a major event coming up in October, October 5-6 in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's called Women with Drive. It's a summit, 2 days of educational panel discussions. We're going to talk about safety. We're going to talk about how to do it all, how to have a family and still have a career in this sport. People like Kelly Earnhardt's going to come in and talk, and Sarah Fisher. And, you know, we have not just telling stories, but really meant to be interactive and demonstrate what's possible, but also the hurdles that people have had to overcome to be able to do what they do and to do it well. So we've got a variety of topics and over the 2 days and a really stellar group of panelists. And we also have some great keynote speakers. I'm bringing some other athletes from other sports, that sailing is one of them. And I've got a fabulous friend that is very successful in sailing, Linda Lindquist. And she was part of the America's Cup team, and that was all females, but then they brought in a male at the very end. I mean, it's how can we learn from others, and then how can we hear great stories? And so that's, we're going to have 2 days of those types of discussions and interactions, and really excited about it. It is meant to be industry wide. It's not just, it's in Charlotte. It was in Nashville last year. It's in Charlotte this year. We really want to engage all the sanctioning bodies, all the disciplines of the sport. It's not just meant to be NASCAR or IndyCar or SCCA or IMSA, want everybody, because we're all in this business together. Everybody's got their own niche, you know, and I know that every niche competes against each other sometimes for fans and sponsors and calendar, you know, but at the same time, there's a time when we all have to come together and learn and share. And that's the goal of our Women with Drive Summit. You can register now. Registration's open. $350 is the registration fee for the 2 days if you register between now and, I think it's August 1st or August 15th.
And they go to womenmotorsportsna.com to register.
Actually, you go, we've got the website for registering, but if you do go to womenmotorsportsna.com, there's a way to register from there. Yes, you have to link to it, but it doesn't take you directly, but it does, you can get there through us. Because all the proceeds, the net proceeds, benefit Women in Motorsports North America. And it's going to take place at Hendricks, you know, the race shop, or not race shop, but their team headquarters in Charlotte. So we'll be right on the grounds of the NASCAR Rick Hendricks team headquarters.
See, besides that, you've got another major event coming up, the induction into the Automotive Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I still can't believe that's going to happen. So July 21st, I will be inducted into the Automotive Hall of Fame. And I just haven't wrapped my head around this yet. I've had months to understand it, but it still is hard. I mean, if you look at, you know, the started in 1939, and it's the icons of the automotive industry. And so but you know, I think they're trying to grow their females. I think I'm the eighth or ninth woman. And I also think they're trying, you know, they do have, I think I'm the fifth or sixth race car driver, the Mario Andretti and Richard Petty and AJ Foyt and, you know, Janet and Shirley. And I know that Denise McCluggage was inducted in 2001. And I know it was a high point in her career. She shared that with me. And this will definitely be a high point in my career. So to be inducted into the Automotive Hall of Fame. So, you know, it's just one of the biggest honors that I think anybody in this industry could have. And so I'm very humbled about this.
Did you know this was coming, or did you just get a phone call out of nowhere?
No, but I have to tell you, how I did find out is almost as meaningful or as mind-blowing as the fact itself, because it was about 2 days before Christmas, and I was in California with my daughter and grandkids, and I got an email from Roger Penske. I don't get emails from Roger Penske. I looked at that, and I'm like, no, that can't be. And I opened it. Yeah, it's an email from Roger Penske. And he was the one to tell me. He was inducted in 2015. And so he was the one to tell me. And then I opened the attachment, which was the letter from the Automotive Hall of Fame telling me, you know, and I think I screamed. And the next morning when I woke up, I thought, I think I had this dream. And so I looked at my emails again, and it was like, no, damn it, there it is there. That's how I found out. I had no idea.
That's great. You just feel your excitement. Jim, is there anything you wanted to ask? Do you want to add here?
I've talked to Lynn a bunch. She's kind of got, I do want to say that, you know, our primary charity at this event is the Women in Motorsports Council. So all, you know, that's going to be our primary charity at our event, which we're all going to get behind. And as I told her, and everybody in the SCDA knows, you know, we have had a woman president of the SCDA. We have many women drivers. I've had many, many close races with women drivers. So when I started thinking about what to do for this year's festival in September at Road America, that's when it hit me. And that's when I called. Actually, I have to throw some kudos out to George Burgundy's friend, Lynn's, who I called George, and I said, George, how do I get a hold of Lynn? He said, well, I got her number. I'm like, well, here's what I want to do. And he goes, oh, why? That's a good idea. Nobody's ever thought of that. I said, well, I thought of it, but we got to put it all together. So that's how it all kind of came apart, for those of you that didn't know. And then we just started brainstorming from there, and here we are. You know, we're charging forward and going great guns. So
I think you should know also, Lynn, that when this was brought up at a board meeting, there was no controversy to it. It was, you know, hey Jim, good idea. Duh, why didn't we do this before? You know, it was consensus immediately.
That's nice to hear.
I'm really interested in what's going to happen at the event, how Lynn sees the activities there, and Alex, how you and Jim, I know, have a rich palette of events that relate to women in motorsports, as well as the usual vintage race activities. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. Lynn, do you have a few more moments?
Yeah.
Okay, I think sure. Maybe just to let Jim's can start running through, but this is our biggest event of the year, and there are always tons of extra things built around it. But this year, with the particular theme of women in motorsports, it's further expanded. So maybe, Jim, if you want to touch on some of those pieces.
Absolutely.
And then we can touch a little bit also on our sort of standards, too, because some of the folks listening to this might not be aware of them.
Yeah, Friday will be our test day. We're going to, you know, everybody will be a test running on Friday. And then we have a big welcome social gathering at the Road America Center, 6:30 Friday night. So Friday is, you know, in loading in and testing all day. Saturday we'll kick off everything. We do have the closed wheel enduro, which is at the end of the day, Friday. So that is our only big, race on Friday is just the enduro. Saturday, we've got a host of stuff going on, including something new. We're doing cars and canvas through coffee and Kansas. I keep getting that wrong. Coffee and canvas, which is something for the non-racers that are there and family members. We have Chris Bonk's Bottle and Bottega is putting that on and helping us with that. And then we have our Celebrity Rides with Tours for donations. So we're going to have our drivers up there driving. And then we have an all-in race for all of our female drivers there, one event that just lets them all race themselves. It's going to be a big show because we're going to have open and closed wheels together. So we'll have a split start, keep everybody safe. We'll keep everybody safe. I've been catching a lot of flack. We're going to split start them. It'll be fine. We used to do our old enduros with had everybody. So we're kind of bringing back that old school thing. And then we have the road course reenactment, which you can participate with your race car if you want and street car. We have 25 Brass Era cars coming to do our touring on Saturday and put on a nice show. We've got a wonderful car show planned that's modeled after the way the Milwaukee Concourse was going on. Then we have Sunday, we have our cup races. We've modified our cup races a little bit to include open wheel. So there's the Elkhart Lake Cup, the Sheldon Cup, and the Kimberly Cup. Sunday, we have lunchtime touring and all that going on for celebrity donations.
You have a big Saturday night.
That's where the Saturday Night Banquet, which is not a formal thing, Lynn, but I saw you in action actually at a MRPA event once. And this will be maybe a little more formal, but not much.
Okay.
But I think that's really a setting with, you know, Q&A and talking to the group where you'll have the audience that is most likely probably to pitch in with what you're trying to achieve. And, you know, we'll certainly go through that beforehand, but questions somewhat similar to this, you and the other racing women of renown would be basically a panel in a very friendly setting.
Right.
But I would say the passion you were showing there is very interesting. It was the joy you had with talking about your racing career was absolutely wonderful, and including the, you know, the Pinto in the drink, et cetera. But as you talked about when you started actually all these things kicking in, and when you said to it that you said it's much bigger than me, and then the passion kicked in. And I think to have that is something that I know you're going to bring across to the group at the, you know, at the banquet on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've got lots going on, which is great. Something for everybody. You have to leave me time to go shopping in your gift shop, because the Road America gift shop is the best gift shop of any racetrack I have ever been in.
If you get bored, Lynn, you can always come to registration.
Absolutely. Hang out with you.
Now, actually, for real, before Stacy was in this role, you know, you were touching on it, but if you get something messed up on registration, the ripple effect shuts down the whole weekend.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And at an event like this, if you have a major screw up, including having three cars with the same numbers, and you try to get that straightened out, you're suddenly shut down for 20 minutes. And the ripple effect is, you know, is as bad as somebody oiling the track. It really is. So, yeah. And Stacy's kept us on, all going the right way. Kelly?
One question would be, talking about development, are there any events that are specifically aimed at attracting youth, you know, and getting them excited, since you're...
Not as of right now. I mean, that's certainly, if, you know, first of all, everybody on this working group are volunteers, you know, with that, it's like, I mean, everybody in racing, we rely on volunteers. So everybody's, you know, fully employed and working. So it's hard to you know, we've got to prioritize. We are launching in March, in July, a mentorship, a virtual mentorship, which will be open, free and open to the public. So it's like, you will go to our website, you can literally register for this mentorship, which will be on all disciplines. Again, we'll have engineers, we'll have marketing, we'll have volunteers, you know, officials and volunteers, we'll have racers, drivers. So that will be a way that people can, you know, access what our sport is like, what it's like to be one of those. What's it like to be an engineer? What's it like to be a mechanic? What's it like to be in, you know, marketing? What's it like to be in PR? What's it like to work in media? So we are trying to reach out to schools. In other words, we're trying to have our social media get to the educational network, so to speak. But, you know, events are really hard to do. And so the event that we're doing, the Women with Drive event, if we have one premier summit, you know, and we will definitely have whatever market we're in, we'll try to get it, you know, we'll find out what schools are in the area. We've got already schools that we're working with in the Charlotte area. But I mean, I know that like the Women in Motorsports Commission, the FIA, they have Girls on Track. And they bring girls to Formula One races, you know, and go-karting. And I would love, we just can't do it all. We can't do everything. And what I'm trying to do is to encourage others who have the resources to do that, like the karting organizations. And, you know, karting is so diverse in this country that there's not an organization umbrella. So what I would love to do is hope that, or what I'd love to achieve is that we could get the karting world to start doing programs or doing events to bring new kids in. So as opposed to us trying to do it, you know, I'm hoping that that's what'll happen. A byproduct of this will encourage others to do things.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially given Alex's point about how, you know, young people that come back are the most direct connection with young people that are considering what the future looks like, right? So,
I mean, like IMSA, which I love because that's how I came up. Robert Wickens just won an IMSA race at Watkins Glen. Robert Wickens is in a wheelchair, was paralyzed from his IndyCar crash two years ago. I mean, they will promote that, which is great because that will reach a different audience. You know, when you talk about it, you could see it, you could be a kind of a concept. So, you know, I just think, if we would do a better, if we in motorsports would do a better job of telling our story to others rather than to each other. Mm. We have this problem where we only talk to each other. And if we would just get out of our own way a little bit and understand that we need to, and with social media today, it's a lot easier to do that than it used to be. But somebody has to do it. Somebody has to be telling our story, meaning the wonders of motorsports. You know, the discipline, the work ethic, the challenging, the decision-making, all the things that you learn through motorsports benefit life. But we don't talk about that enough to the outsiders, to the people outside our sport. It's all about, you know, how fast did you go? What was your qualifying time? What kind of engine do you have? You know, how's your tires work? I mean, you know, we talk to each other all the time instead of spending some time talking outside to other people.
Alex, I'll put in a little plug that because of your and other Vintage Club support, we're able to make victorylane.com no password, no charge. So we're doing a better job, thanks to Kellick's help, of reaching not just the core vintage racers, but the would-be vintage racers, the curious about, and that has been a real positive thing over the last year and a half. So thanks, Alex.
Thank you. And this having this in effect, like it open access has really made it easier to get the message out. And certainly when you've had articles related to us, we can just immediately send a link off to our folks. I think it's been great. And you've all been spectacular.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right.
Have fun at the induction.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.